from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Michael Krasny. At 9, we talk about Silicon Valley subcontractors using cheap labor imported from Eastern Europe. A Mercury News investigation identified one case involving Tesla, and Elon Musk says he'll investigate. But how common is this kind of exploitation, and who's responsible for enforcing the law? Then at 9:30, Measure AA on the June 7th ballot asks voters in 9 counties for more property tax money to restore wetlands around the San Francisco Bay. That's all coming up in this hour of Forum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Michael Krasny. A recent San Jose Mercury News investigation accused Tesla Motors of using grossly underpaid, overworked laborers from Eastern Europe to build a new facility. The report has exposed the potential abuse of simple business visas by a subcontractor. Is this a one-off or a widespread practice? And if it's not widespread, who's responsible to make sure it doesn't become widespread? Well, we've got the reporter in studio with us this morning, Lewis Hansen, technology reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here, Rachel.
So, Lewis, how did this story begin? Usually these things happen with a tip or a lawsuit, right?
This happened with a lawsuit, and we decided to follow up on it and do some shoe leather reporting. And the story really starts around a 41-year-old Gregor Lesnik, 41 at the time. And he was a laborer in Slovenia, and he was out of work, like many men his age were. And he decided to come over to the States for a higher paying job. So he signed up with a contractor and was able to get into the United States that way.
And what happened to him?
Well, he was working on a project at the Tesla Motors factory. It was a contract worth over $100 million to build a paint factory at the Fremont facility. He was working for the contractor, Eisenman, and there was a subcontractor, Slovenian company called Vuzim. He hired on with Vuzim, and he came over to Silicon Valley in early 2015. He was a pipe fitter, and he helped set up the ventilation system with about 140 other Eastern European men working for Vuzim in the factory.
And there, I understand Tesla was paying the subcontractor about $55 an hour for the work. How much money was our gentleman getting?
Well, it's unclear how much Tesla was paying. The contract between Eisenman and Vuzim gave an allowance of $55 an hour for the foreign workers. But that allowance may be true. However, Gregor Lesnik was making less than $5 an hour, according to his pay slips and his contract. The greater amount, no one knows what happened to the difference between the $55 an hour and about the $5 an hour that Mr. Lesnik was making.
On the face of it, it seems bizarre that he would be happy with $5 an hour. But then you think, well, Slovenia, a depressed economically speaking country in Eastern Europe. And of course, if you're pocketing that much of the amount of money you're getting from Tesla, you would have the money to fly people over across the Atlantic and the North American continent.
Well, Eisenman said that they hired Vuzim and workers like Mr. Lesnik because they had experience doing this type of job. And they were comfortable. Eisenman was comfortable working with Vuzim. What happened when the workers got there, it was a good deal for them. Mr. Lesnik was unemployed. He was living with his mother, and he had a pregnant girlfriend. So he had lots of incentive to find the best job that he possibly could. And he's a skilled tradesman. He was trained as an electrician, and he knows how to work with his hands. So he had some valuable skills there. It was a trade-off that he was willing to make, to work 3 or 6 months in the United States under tough conditions, but making some money for his family.
So he gets here, and then the workplace conditions are another concern. He ends up getting injured on the job in a way that might not be the case if regular safety regulations were followed.
Yes, they were long hours, and the men willingly worked it. The first 8 days that Mr. Lesnick worked was 80. He put in 80 hours, so it was typically 10-hour days. 6, maybe 7 days a week. He worked there until the middle of May, and he was on his 13th straight day of work. It was a Saturday afternoon, and he was up on the roof of the paint shop. It's about 30 feet high, and he was walking around without a safety harness, and he stepped on a tile. The tile hadn't been secured. He fell through the tile, bounced off some scaffolding, and dropped to the ground about 30 feet. He broke both his legs, his ribs. He had a concussion. And when he woke up, he didn't know what was happening to him.
So we should mention that Elon Musk has publicly tweeted that he's going to investigate. This is what the company told us. They declined to come on the show to talk about it for this particular forum segment. Since you've begun reporting on this, the story has kind of expanded beyond this one guy's story to talk about the subcontractor, to talk about the kind of visas they were using to bring people in from overseas.
Yes, that's an interesting point, Rachel. We talk a lot about the H-1B visa for high-skilled workers in Silicon Valley to bring over engineers and people with unique skill sets that companies need. Mr. Lesnick and the other men at Vuzim came over on B-1, B-2 visas. That's a typical visa that you would use for a business conference or to visit your cousins in Chicago. It's a catch-all, as the State Department says. You can do a little work. You can do a little bit of vacationing. But you're not broadly allowed to do hands-on work. The original intent of the B-1 visa is to do short-term projects, training, helping install or set up a project, or if you're a businessman coming over to the United States to help expand your business, scout for locations, form connections. But broadly, construction work and hands-on work is banned.
So how did they get away with it? And who is supposed to be responsible for making sure this kind of thing doesn't happen?
I think that the B-1 visa problem, sources tell me in D.C., has been a problem for a long time, especially for labor advocates. Now, in the last year that they were counting, in 2014, there were 6.2 million B-1, B-2 visas issued. So that's an enormous number of people coming into the country with these papers. Very difficult to police all of those people. And one would assume most of them are doing nothing wrong. The people who are responsible for it on a federal level are Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, for the visa side of things, to see if the traveler is coming in for the right purpose, is allowed in the country, and on the labor side, to look at the enforcement of the $7.25 federal minimum wage. That's the Department of Labor. And the Department of Labor representative in San Jose told me that B-1 visas are a growing problem around here. It's a very hard issue to get around because this is a workforce that often doesn't speak English and often has their own incentives to keep quiet, do their work, and earn their salary.
The irony of this, as we were sort of referencing earlier, is that as piddly as $5 an hour might sound to American workers, it's still enough money for guys like the one we were talking about to save up and take care of his family back in Slovenia.
Sure. I went to some apartments in Milpitas and knocked on a few doors with an interpreter. I don't speak Slovenian. But we found some men who were working for Vuzim. They had been doing this for several years. They were men in their 40s, trained, had been doing this work for 20 years or so, and they said they were making at least $10 an hour or so. So it was a fair paycheck for them. And one of the men pulled out his phone and showed it to me and showed me some pictures. Big house in Croatia, a BMW in his front yard. And he said, whatever we're doing over here, it's good. It works for us. And they also told me that wherever there's an automotive plant in the world, they're there. They're working. So there's this itinerant workforce of skilled tradesmen going around the world on these short-term projects.
Mexico, Kentucky, everywhere.
Yes, exactly. And there was one in particular in Alabama, a Mercedes-Benz plant, where the contractor, Eisenman, was accused and investigated by ICE for doing a similar a project. They were importing Polish workers to finish out a Mercedes-Benz factory. So, yes, this has been happening for some time.
Well, I don't want to hog the conversation here. Dear listeners, if you're paying attention, if you want to join in, please call us at 866-733-6786. And now that you've got your pen at the ready, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org, tweet to @KQEDForum. So Lewis, I'm curious what kind of reaction you've gotten, presumably if this is a widespread practice. Are you getting more sort of tips and comments from people inside Silicon Valley or really perhaps I should say the automotive industry? Perhaps this expands much further than the San Francisco Bay Area as we're talking about.
It has expanded beyond the Bay Area, but I have been receiving dozens of calls and emails and tips about other issues with visa workers taking jobs or feeling like they've displaced American workers or at the very least depressed wages. So it's really an issue that strikes home with a lot of people, especially in the Bay Area. It's a cosmopolitan place, and where your coworker comes from, you might not always know. So.
Well, you've just gone some way there to explaining why we might want to be concerned if the vast majority of these workers don't feel exploited, if everybody's making a piece of profit along the way when we're talking about the companies. To what extent do we have any sense of how many American workers are being displaced?
I haven't been able to find a good number on that. And honestly, I don't think the Department of Labor knows as well. The number of visas issued is a known number. It's about 6.2 million. But the exact companies who are requesting some of these B-1 visas is not tracked by the State Department. So that's very frustrating to immigration policy experts. They can't get a handle on which companies are using B-1s and where these workers are going. So there's been a small push in Congress, basically led by Senator Chuck Grassley of Ohio, to try to find more information about how B-1s are used, where they're coming from, and what these people do when they're in the United States.
What are the potential criminal implications for a company that employs this kind of labor?
The penalties are typically civil penalties, so they're fines. There are criminal penalties associated with it, but it's very rare, immigration experts tell me, that anyone gets charged with a criminal crime. So there's a frustration that some experts say this is just the price of doing business for companies. They'll pay the fine if they're caught, and they'll move on to the next project.
I'll give out the number one more time before asking my next question. 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org. Well, Lewis, this raises another question. I mean, Tesla has a very big public profile. It matters to Elon Musk, one presumes, that he come off well in the press. But that probably isn't the case for a lot of the sort of faceless companies that operate in the U.S. where no one knows who they are and no one really cares.
There's a lot of companies that that are under the radar, that don't draw much attention. And, you know, they're always trying to maximize their profit by getting a good workforce for as little as possible. There are a lot of contractors and subcontractors involved in large projects like this. Now, critics of the immigration policy say that these subcontractors and these smaller companies are a way to insulate larger companies from responsibility over these workers that are coming in on visas.
They can plead ignorance. I had no idea. I was paying them a fair rate and
yes,
this just happened.
Absolutely, yes.
But I wonder to what extent companies are saying I was paying a fair rate and it turns out that, you know, the subcontractor was offering a price significantly cheaper than competitors, in which case part of you has to be thinking, I wonder how they're able to offer the services for such a low price.
I think that's a great question that everyone would ask.
Yeah. If only we knew who was doing it.
Right.
Well, let's head to the phones. We've got Hercules.
Hi, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. Very interesting report that you're talking about. And I was just wondering, does the state of California have anything to say about the way the wages are being managed? Because just because you come from another country doesn't mean that you can just pay people below minimum wage and have them work 13 straight days and 10-hour days and not pay them overtime. Have you found anything about that?
The Department of Labor has some jurisdiction over that, and I believe local prosecutors do as well. But as far as I know, there hasn't been any movement right now from those entities. They may be looking into this as well, but I'm not aware of it. But the state and local authorities do have some regulation abilities.
Okay, good. That's what I was wondering. It seems like something they would be interested in, I would think.
Sure. Yeah. And you raised a great point. In the lawsuit, the men were not given overtime for these additional hours that they were paying, that they're working.
It does seem one wonders whether the rules are different for foreign companies versus American companies in a way that perversely makes it more difficult for American companies to compete for contracts with name brand companies like Tesla.
There was a local contractor that competed for part of this paint shop job and did not get it. So it's very it's a competitive market to be out there. And if your bid comes in higher, it's possible that you don't win.
You're in a race to the bottom with people who aren't playing by the rules.
Yes, it could be. And the men who come over on B-1 visas, one of the requirements is you're paid in the currency of your home country. So the men for VUSM were working for euros.
Interesting. Thank you so much for that great question. Let's go now to Chuck in Oakland. Hi,
hello.
Chuck. Hi.
Hi.
What's your question?
My name is actually Jacques.
Oh, sorry about that.
No problem. Yeah.
I
have two automotive businesses in the central part of Bay Area. And for the last 10 years since the tech boom, we have struggled to find a workforce, just simply mechanics and people who in an entry point or a point of education to come work for us. So we had a real hard time finding a workforce to support a growing business.
It's an interesting comment. Chuck, unfortunately, you're on a very bad cell phone line. Any thoughts you can add to that, Lewis, as you're hearing about that?
I think there's always a need for skilled workers at and tradesmen. And it is a very tight labor market right now as well. So I think there's going to be some competition to find the best.
Thank you so much, Chuck. And I apologize. It's just a bad phone line there. Let's go to Daga in Fremont.
Hi, this is Gagan from Fremont. I myself am a H-1B visa worker here. And I had a comment or a concern that you might be able to address. That is, even for high-skilled immigrants, there seems to be not very many places for people to go voice their concerns, especially if they feel like that they're being misused or inappropriately paid. And it probably is further complicated by people on B1, B2s who do not speak English. So are there places and forums for people to go voice their concern in these situations?
Yeah, that's a great question. The Federal Department of Labor has offices in the Bay Area, and they encourage people to call. They have interpreters for many different languages. They do investigations that are completely confidential. That means they don't name a source. They collect the information from the person who has the grievance, and they investigate it at the company. And no one at the company knows who made the complaint. So the Department of Justice, the Department of Labor is really dependent on people coming to them to point out these problems in the workplace. And, you know, even though H-1B workers are paid a prevailing wage, it's also difficult. I mean, you are in a lot of ways beholden to the companies that bring you here. So, and B-1 workers have even less protection because they're not due a prevailing wage. So they can be even more dependent on their employers.
Does this complaint-based investigation system work, or do you have to, fall three floors to the concrete to get a lawsuit started?
Yeah, I mean, in Mr. Lesnick's case, that was certainly unfortunate, and that's not the way he wanted to bring his lawsuit. But it really does depend on people coming out, and you don't have to be a visa holder if you're anyone in a workplace who believes that there might be some wage and labor issues or violations in your workplace, speak to the Department of Labor.
Let's go to another call. We've got lots of them on the line now. Joseph in Vallejo.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. We've seen an influx of healthcare workers from abroad, most notably from the Philippines. And I'm wondering to which degree does the state actually review and kind of assess or audit those individuals who come, most especially with cases of, whistleblowing and maybe atrocities against the employer?
I think much of the regulation happens on a federal level. But if there are wage violations in California and they're not meeting the California workplace laws, then you can certainly report them to the State Department as well.
Well, Lewis Hansen, technology reporter for San Jose Mercury News, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rachel.
Keep your calls and questions. I post them online at kqed.org/forum, and the conversation will continue there. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro.